Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we say goodbye to a talented singer-songwriter gone way too soon.
Rest in power, Justin Towns Earl.
Okay, Patrick, we have some really sad news that needs to be addressed, and that would be the passing of Justin Towns Earl last week. It was on August 20th, and age 38, way too soon, obviously, and, you know, just a real talent who comes from a musical family, and so I think we want to talk a little bit about his music here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And, where should we start this, Patrick? I know you know quite a bit about this artist, especially his father. So set this up a little bit.
Well, as you said, Jim, it's terrible that an artist of that talent has left us at just 38 years old. So first of all, rest in power, Justin Towns Earl. It is often the case with people whose parents suffer from a particular addiction problem. And in Steve Earle's case, many different addictions. And unfortunately, Justin inherited that gene and that, you know, bit of family history. And it's terrible. But he also left us with a lot of music, which is great. 9 albums, I believe, he put out during his time here on Earth. And he was different from his father's music in the sense that I think he incorporated folk and blues like in a different way. He sang in a much kind of a gentler voice. He was more introspective, I think, and poetic than Steve, who always took kind of a hard-edged, kind of a leather outlaw country kind of approach to his music. And I have read quite a bit about Steve's life, and in an excellent book I just was looking at recently called Hardcore Troubadour, The Life and Near Death of Steve Earle, written by Lauren St. John. There's a whole bunch in this book about Justin idolizing his father, but never really understanding him. And when Justin got to be about 13 or 14 years old, that's when Steve was at his lowest ebb. And the time he spent around his father was often Steve leaving Justin somewhere and going off to score in parts of Nashville where, you know, Justin would never have had any reason to be. And, you know, eventually he lived with his father for a little while during that time, but it was a situation where Steve, again, was not there very much. And when he was, it wasn't really present. So, you know, other than a physical sense. So I think that haunted Justin throughout his whole life, that formative time in your life, right? When you're 13 and 14 years old, to look up to somebody and then, you know, have that person be acting in the way Steve was. So that kind of whole backstory was a big shadow over Justin's life, his entire life. And we know he struggled quite a bit with this addiction problem. He was in and out of a lot of treatment places throughout his whole life. And if you've ever seen him in person, I saw him once at the Birchmere play, an excellent set. And some of the stuff he would say in between songs was more enlightening in many cases, you know, than the music, because he really opened up about his problems and where he'd come from. Yeah.
It's very easy to find some clips like that on YouTube where you can watch some of his live performances, and often he'll tell stories about his times in rehab and things like that. So yeah, he was pretty open about it. As you mentioned, started at an early age and obviously never really was able to shake, you know, those demons. So now, my relationship with his music, I kind of got into him at that weird period of time when physical CDs were going out, but streaming wasn't yet quite a thing. And I actually bought a couple of his albums. I say bought in quote marks here because I got them just as like iTunes downloads. Like I never actually had physical product with this stuff because, you know, there was this period of time when like it was super cheap to buy just like the iTunes downloads and put them on your iPod, you know?
Yep.
And so I was like, well, this seems like the way to go. So anyway, I have a couple of his records that way from, I would say, like the late 2000s, like early in his career, maybe around that era, Harlem River Blues and Midnight at the Movies, I think were probably the two that I'm most familiar with. And the other thing I want to say to that too is I wasn't really all that familiar with his like life story. I just knew him as the son of Steve Earle. I knew he was named after Towns Van Zandt, you know? So I'm kind of like, that's cool. Let's give this kid a listen, right? And I didn't know all about all of his struggles at the time, and I really liked how evocative his songs were. So I guess what I'm saying is you don't necessarily have to know all about the tortured artist to appreciate the music that he ultimately produced, right? And the thing I like about a lot of his stuff, as you mentioned, it moves, he's sort of a second generation like alt country guy, right? Which is an interesting thing, right? Because that whole dynamic of like Steve Earle kind of came out of that outlaw country aesthetic.
Yep.
But then it was at an era, he kind of came in at the beginning of like what was then like alt country as a marketing subgenre, right? So he was kind of, I guess, right in at the kind of beginning of that. And then to think of that, here's like another generation. We're already into like the second generation of that sort of section of music, you know, I think is really interesting. But anyway, I think he took the music in a lot of interesting directions. If you go and listen to his records, they're pretty varied. Like he does a lot of the kind of twangy stuff and sort of traditional music, but he also does stuff that you're like, this could be at, you know, a club in Greenwich Village and it would fit right in. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yep. Totally.
I think you're totally right on the folkier side. And I think it actually interesting he was named after Townes Van Zandt, because I think the stuff that sounds more like Townes Van Zandt is some of his more interesting stuff. So
yes, agreed.
And he had a kind of a similar writing style even too, like story songs about, you know, troubled characters and stuff like that. I would point people to a song like Yuma, which is on his first EP, and it's just a tremendous song. And to think that that was like right out of the gate.
Well, he woke up that morning and he called him to work, put on his daddy's old suit with a secondhand shirt, all untucked, shoes untied. The people all snickered as he walked by, so he stopped in a bar and bought a shot of Stevens and another. He bummed a cigarette and said, talking with a stranger about the weather. And then he paid his bill and he stepped outside and fell down into the street. He cursed and he cried as he climbed back up to his feet again. So up the road he found a payphone and called his mom. He said, Mom, I think I'll be coming home. I've been feeling so bad and tired of this city. Ain't been the same since I lost my pretty Angeline. And Mom, I miss her so. It's been over a year and there ain't nothing I fear so much as being alone. And then he hung up the phone without saying goodbye. Stopped in a store and bought a postcard and signed it fairly well and sent it back home to you, Mom.
It shows you just how talented he was in his own right.
Without a doubt. Well, very well said, Jim. And I think, too, you know, I love that Greenwich Village kind of comparison, because I think he was in many ways a character that you could see spending a lot of time placing each word at the right spot in the song. That seemed to be very important. You know, you could see him almost rewriting and scribbling out words and trying to get just that right one. And, you know, his last album that he put out in 2019 on New West called The Saint of Lost Causes, which, you know, again, one of those things where, wow, that's a weird foreshadow. Yeah. It shows all that stuff, too. And there's a song on there that I really like called Frightened by the Sound, another one I would point people to for a recent one to look at. And listen to the music in comparison to the way the words lay on top of it. One really depends completely on the other in his work. But I would say that the lyrics really play probably a more important role than definitely what they did in his father's music. And unfortunately, he is, you know, always going to be judged kind of in that shadow of his father. But he's somebody completely different, like you said, and definitely deserves to be judged on his own terms, you know, outside of those two famous names that he carries with.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, totally, totally.
Silence broken. Thunder roll. Followed by the bright light. From a lightning strike. Wind is picking up to a low mark. Feel the pressure drop. Rain starting to stop. Storm coming. Oh, it's gonna miss us now. Storm coming. Don't be frightened by the sound.
And, you know, Justin Townes Earl, he lived in New York for a while. I know he lived on the West Coast.
Yep.
I get the sense that he pulled in a lot of influences from a lot of different musicians. And, you know, one of the things that also drew me to him was I heard a couple of covers that he did on...
That's right.
On Midnight at the Movies, he covers The Replacements. He plays Can't Hardly Wait. And it's it's beautiful. It's really a beautiful rendition of that song.
Lights, they flash in the evening. Ooh. strays. I'll be home when I'm sleeping. I can hardly wait. No, I can't wait.
I also saw him once on that AV, what is that, AV Club cover series they did on YouTube. He covered Atlantic City.
And oh, beautiful.
It's tremendous. Just solo guitar playing Atlantic City, and it's really great.
Both those right up the alley, yep.
He definitely had a lot of, it was sort of a quiet emotion, I think, that he brought to his music, you know?
That's well said.
Like, like, you'd listen to it and it would just kind of seep out a little bit. It wouldn't, it wasn't quite as explosive as Steve Earle's kind of stuff, right?
You right. Know? No, no, never got to that sort of like lacerated edge kind of cutting style that Steve did so well.
Right.
But yeah, I like that a lot. A kind of a quiet power and meditative power to his music. Yeah, well said.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, rest in power, Justin
Rest
Towns,
in power.
Earl.
That's all we can say.
Shocking and just, you know, troubling. So, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, as you mentioned, and as we always like to say, you know, the music lives on. He did put out a pretty big body of work over the last, you know, 13 years. So there's a lot of music out there. And I would say, not that I've necessarily listened to all of it closely, but I would say that everything I've heard from him has always seem to maintain a pretty consistent level of quality. So I don't think you can go wrong kind of diving into any of those records.
No, and his early, you know, his first three or four are on Bloodshot, or four or five, I guess. And then he put out in, and I'll just mention really quickly, between 2014 and 2017, he actually put out a trilogy that says a lot just by the titles about what it was about and how his whole upbringing impacted his life. The first album was called Single Mothers. Second album is called Absent Fathers. And the last album is called Kids in the Street. So that, you know, right there encapsulates his unflinching attitude toward the things he went through. And you know, the strength of his art, it was that he was able to face it and write about it.
Yeah. I think there are some very strong reflections there on
absolutely,
you know, the American society. So, all right. Well, happier things tomorrow.
Yes.
I know.
Let's hope so.
And I would just, you know, encourage people to take some time. If you don't know this artist, get to know his work. I think it's something that will really stick with you. And unfortunately, we won't have more of that. So, all right.
Yeah.
And with that, it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Now there's trouble busting in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble out on the promenade, and the gambling commission's hanging on by the skin of its teeth. Everything dies, that's a fact. And everything that dies someday comes back. But you make up.